It's the new gold rush, the growing business of medical marijuana in Florida. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the studios at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sessingham. More and more every week are signing up for access to medical marijuana in Florida. With over 100,000 already on the list, there is clearly money to be made. What are the obstacles and what are the opportunities in the burgeoning medical marijuana industry? We have Kim Rivers. She's CEO of Trulieve. Kim, welcome to Florida Matters.
Thanks so much for having me.
So describe a dispensary. What forms can people buy marijuana right now?
So Trulieve has 14 locations across the state, and we've really made it a point to have a similar patient experience at each one of our dispensaries. So patients can purchase medical cannabis in a variety of forms at Trulieve. We offer about 70 SKUs, and our products range from capsules to tinctures, which is a sublingual drop, to multiple different types of vaporization products. We also offer oral syringes and concentrates, as well as our two flower-based types of product for inhalation.
No smoking right now, though. That's still illegal.
That's correct. So in Florida currently, patients are not able to purchase bud or flower for smoking purposes. But as I mentioned, we do have flower available in a tamper-proof container that meets all of the requirements of Florida law for vaporization.
Vaporization. Okay. Daniel Elias is here. He's president of Pharmacology University, which is a medical marijuana education program. Welcome, Daniel.
Welcome.
Daniel also owns a dispensary in San Juan, Puerto Rico. So how long is your program, Pharmacology University? How long has that been operating?
We have been in business for 12 years now and in different states.
It's a franchise.
It's a franchise,
and
yes.
You operate the Tampa-based.
Tampa and Orlando.
And now Orlando, too.
Yes.
That's right.
We just started this year in Florida. Our franchises in the state is in Tampa, Miami, Orlando, and Fort Lauderdale.
The franchise has been going 12 years. What about Tampa?
Basically, we are going to start now in August, but we currently can take up to 100 students each class.
Okay. We also have Darren Potter here. He's the Chief Horticulture Officer at Grow Healthy in Lake Wales. Darren, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
So Polk County, where Lake Wales is, it used to be the citrus capital of the world, but citrus is now just a shadow of what it once was, unfortunately. Do you see marijuana as a boon to agriculture in Florida?
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. A lot of the citrus nurseries are facing the blight of the canker and all the other issues.
Citrus greening. Primarily.
It's an opportunity for citrus to make a transition into other fields of agriculture, such as cannabis and hemp.
Okay. So are you seeing interest from citrus growers?
Yes, very regularly. And I have been since 2014. I've been in communication with a lot of citrus growers.
Daniel, 100,000 people now are signed up on the list to access medical marijuana, and that's growing quickly. But what kind of a market are we really talking about? This is a state with a population of over 20 million people. So is 0.5% of the population enough to build an industry on?
Well, definitely it is, because as any other state that already started the medical cannabis industry, it starts slow. But as soon as people manage to start talking about it and getting results about their different conditions, then it's going to be growing very, very fast.
Tell us a little bit about Pharmacology University.
Basically, what we do is we educate people that wants to start working in the industry. And we divide it in three courses: cultivation, oil extraction, manufacturing, and dispensary. So when they go to get a job, they are already prepared with a certification of a school that has been doing this for many, many years.
Do you have any data on what percentage of the people that have gone through Pharmacology University so far? You said it's been in operation for 12 years in different states and in Puerto Rico. What percentage are getting jobs in the field?
Well, typically it's from 70 to 75%. In this industry, when it's only medicinal, we depend a lot about the patients. Because as more patients get enrolled, more dispensaries are going to be able to be open. More dispensaries, more job opportunities. So it's very important that we all work together to try to get more patients to enroll to the system. But right now with 70 to 75%, they have to wait maybe a little bit. But at the same time, as soon as a new dispensary is open, they will have the opportunity to be the first ones to get their resumes and have our certification to back them up.
Right. So certification right now is not required for any of these jobs, Darren?
No, ma'am.
So you have people, how many people working for you at Grow Healthy?
We have about 40 people on staff, and we're hiring every single day in all departments from cultivation, processing, delivery, dispensing, security, you name it. We're a growing company. I think every company right now is in a phase of growth right now.
So you're looking for people?
Always.
Really?
Yeah. That being said, I would say that we probably see anywhere between 100 to 500 applicants a week.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. And you've got 40, 45 people right now
on
staff. Mm-hmm. So what kind of background are you looking for?
Well, in cultivation, most of the staff members there have degrees in horticulture or environmental science or biology. In processing, most of the people in there have either a background in chemistry, biomedical science, biology. In patient care, we have patient care representatives that speak to the patients concerning our medicine and what we produce. Most of them have backgrounds in nursing or a hospital background, hospital management, things of that nature.
So this is not a typical farm we're talking about. If I asked a citrus grower the same question, I don't think he would be talking about those college degrees. I mean, do you have manual labor?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have manual labor. You know, when you talk about citrus, it's a little bit different, right? In citrus, you're growing a fruit, but you're not really required to squeeze the juice, refine the juice, package, you know, label, all of the steps that occur after actually cultivation. So in our industry, for the 13 licenses in Florida, we're required to do every single step in that process. There's no break in the chain. We don't outsource, for example, processing. We don't outsource cultivation. We don't outsource the sale, dispensing of the product.
Okay, so this is a little bit confusing. We want to go into this a little bit more. This is called vertical integration, and this was required by the legislature that when they gave a grower a license, that grower was required to do all the steps that you're just talking about, not only grow the medical marijuana, but also process it and distribute it.
Correct.
And so this is where I want to know where you come in then.
So every MMTC, like Darren mentioned.
Explain what an MMTC is.
Sure. It's a medical marijuana treatment center. That's the designation that we've been given. And so Trulieve was the first fully licensed medical marijuana treatment center in Florida. And so we were awarded the original license out of the Northwest region. Darren and Grow Healthy are in Central Florida, as you know, but we both have vertically integrated or part of a vertically integrated company. So Trulieve, just for comparison purposes, we cultivate. We have a large-scale cultivation, indoor cultivation operation. We also manufacture all of our products in-house, those 70 SKUs that I spoke of. And then we are required to do our own transportation to our dispensaries across the state. And then we also offer, which I know Grow Healthy does as well, delivery services to our patients. So we are full service from what they call seed to sale in Florida, and that's required by law. We have approximately 550 employees, and we just had a job fair with about 350 people. We have 30 different positions that are open, everything from starting out at $10 an hour, or starting, you know, hourly wage, all the way up to salaried positions that have highly technical and specific requirements between $75,000 and $80,000 a year.
Okay, so this is strange, this vertical integration. I don't know of any other industry where that's required. As you were talking about, Darren, in the citrus industry, certainly you can grow oranges and you don't have to be responsible for processing them and distributing them. Daniel.
Actually, there are other states that is not vertical integration. For example, Puerto Rico, you can have a license only for manufacturing or only for cultivation. In our example, we have only dispensary. And that gives the opportunity to start in the business without that much of a first investment. So, and at the same time, you can have more competition, etc. But certainly here in Florida, they decided to do it that way.
What is the logic of that, Darren?
From a regulatory standpoint, and just to be clear, I did not make the rules. I just abide.
Does anyone know what the logic of it is? Give me the argument for having vertical integration of the medical marijuana industry.
I would say that the Office of Medical Marijuana Use, formerly the Compassionate Care Program, it's an idea to keep control over the market, not in the sense of who has the licenses and who controls what happens, more so control over the product, knowing where that product goes through the entire process. We're required to tag every single plant. We're required to manifest every single motion of plants throughout the entire facility. So if a plant moves, for example, from the clone phase to the vegetative phase, we do an inventory tracking process in the computer system as well as a paper manifest. So it's really about control of the product through the entire process all the way to the patient to make sure that none of this product is, for example, going to the street or going to someone who's not qualified to have it through the medical program.
Okay. So, Kim, I understand Trulieve is suing the state of Florida over limits on the number of dispensaries?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. We filed a petition with the state to ask for the cap that was placed on medical marijuana treatment centers this past session, limiting us to only 25 locations throughout the entire state of Florida to be removed. And we have a number of arguments. And one would be, we do believe that the rural communities in the state of Florida should not be left behind in the program. And I think an unfortunate and unintended consequence of the 25 cap is that it concentrates dispensary locations in populated areas, heavily populated areas, and leaves out some of our more rural communities in Florida. And some of those communities are in, I would argue, the greatest need for dispensary facilities, for the education opportunities that come with those physical locations, as well as the cost savings to have to avoid delivery.
So right now, they're giving out the dispensary licenses based on geographical density, I guess, for every certain number of people?
There's a formula that is embedded in statute for those 25. And so you have what amounts to regional caps. So, for example, in Northwest Florida, we are only allowed 2 locations out of those 25.
Because you don't have as many people as they do in South Florida.
So that's right. It's based on census. And so what we're seeing, and it's already starting to happen, all of these companies are clustering dispensaries among the most heavily populated areas of the state. So, for example, if you go to the Tampa area, there are several companies, I think 5 or 6 even, that have dispensaries open in a very small geographic area because, one, there's more physician activity there and, of course, just pure population numbers.
So what would be a better way to give out licenses for the dispensaries if you don't do it by census population?
Well, initially, when we first applied for our license, and one of the fundamental areas in which we were scored was that we had to come up with a plan to show that we could adequately serve, you know, all of the potential patients in the state of Florida. And there were no caps on dispensaries. And so we built a business and a business plan around that premise that we were going to be able to open locations as it made sense for us as a company and for the patients in Florida. So I don't think it's necessary for lawmakers to be involved in where dispensaries are located. I think that that's a business decision for the MMTCs and really one that we should be able to make given all of the information, patient activity, physicians, our particular business model on a company-by-company basis.
So, Darren, Trulieve has taken the lead on litigating this, it sounds like, but it must affect your company as well.
Absolutely. I think Kim is spot on when she says the more rural areas are underserviced and they're typically the greatest in need. You know, I would certainly like to be able to see dispensaries provide for patients that are in those rural areas. And you have difficulties with municipalities granting permissions, granting the authority to zoning rights to be able to put a dispensary in these locations. So see, these are some of the hurdles we run through. We don't just run through the hurdles of the state limiting the number of dispensaries. We also run through issues with the municipalities and whether they have a moratorium in place. So that's also part of the clustering that Kim's referring to, which is something that happened in a number of states that I've seen over the years. You know, in Colorado, when I worked there for a number of years, you had the Green Mile, you had we called it Broadsterdam, which was Broadway, and all of the dispensaries were in one location. So it kind of created an environment where businesses felt uncomfortable because all the businesses surrounding them were medical marijuana treatment centers in Colorado. And I fear that can definitely be something that would occur here.
It creates an atmosphere just like if you had an area that was only bars.
Correct.
Right. So I guess the thinking was that they didn't want dispensaries popping up near schools or near churches or in certain areas that, you know, popping up on every street corner.
There are requirements in law that have been there from the very beginning when this program was first enacted back in 2014 that did place limitations on where appropriate zoning, which is a kind of that secondary conversation that Darren was speaking to at the local level. Mm-hmm. So we have never been authorized to open locations within a certain distances of schools and churches and so forth. So that's never really been part of the conversation. And we're happy to comply with those requirements. You know, truly, even, and I know Grow Healthy is the same. We have a goal to be responsible and cooperative corporate citizens and to lift up populations that we have the privilege of partnering with. And so I think that, you know, if you were to talk with local governments and communities that we are and have been operating now in some cases for more than 2 years, they have nothing but positive things to say. We're respectful. We're proactive in trying to be on the forefront of patient education, community education, giving back to those communities in which we're located. And that's something that we take very seriously because we recognize that we're pioneers in this industry in the state of Florida, and it's important the impression that we leave.
I'm Robin Sessingham, and you're listening to Florida Matters. We're taking a short break, and we'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham, and we're talking about the medical marijuana industry in Florida. And here in the studio with us is Daniel Elias, president of Pharmacology University, a medical marijuana education program. Darren Potter is chief horticulture officer at Grow Healthy in Lake Wales. And from the studio of WFSU in Tallahassee, we have Kim Rivers. She's CEO of Trulieve. So, Kim Rivers, how much would a typical patient spend per month on medical marijuana?
Oh, that's a very interesting question. It really runs the gamut. Our products range from $25 up to, you know, $100. And that's going to be a range of milligrams. It's going to be a range of what we call dispensing methods, meaning the route of administration, whether it's oral or sublingual or inhalation. And that really is a conversation that happens between the patient and their physician. So when the patient comes to see a dispensary, so when they walk into Trulieve and we pull that patient up into the registry, we can see the types of products that patient has access to, along with the amount of milligrams per day that the physician has recommended. So it really is, in Florida, driven by the physician and the relationship the physician has with their patient. But,
so this is not a coffee shop in Amsterdam.
Definitely
by
not.
By any means.
No.
So Daniel, you were kind of talking about the bottleneck created by the lack of physicians who are able to order the medical marijuana.
Exactly. That's very important because many people are hearing about this new type of medication, and many patients want to get in, but at the same time, if there are not that many physicians giving these type of prescriptions, well, they will not have the opportunity to try this new medication. So that's something that we, in our courses, we have specific courses for doctors that we are trying to get them to learn about this type of new medication. And actually, we are getting certified by the Board of Doctors here in Florida. So when they take our courses, they will have continuing education credits for their practice.
So far, physicians have been a little reluctant to jump into this. And the Tampa Bay Times just recently had a story about the fact that there's a lot of troubled physicians. They said almost 1 in 5, I think, of the physicians that are licensed right now have troubled pasts. So there is a problem with the physicians right now.
It is. And remember that we are competing with Big Pharma. And they have been visiting doctors for so many years.
Are you going to have people in medical sales visiting the doctor's offices, Darren?
Yeah, so that is something that we do practice. We do have representatives go to the doctor's office to educate, provide information on the products and services we provide. You know, in my experience, and I've spoken to a number of doctors throughout the state, is that you have doctors who are fully on board and they look at this as an opportunity to wean people off of the opiates that have been an epidemic in the United States for a number of years now, as well as you have doctors who are just unsure. They've taken the continued education course. They can write the recommendation, but they don't have enough information. over the years, you've had a lot of cannabis growth in the United States, but you haven't had the white papers written. You haven't had the education provided to the doctors that they can research and feel comfortable recommending something to a patient. So whereas in the pharmaceutical industry, you have tons of research, you have FDA approval, and they've gone through a lot of hoops to get to that step to where they can actually recommend. So the issue is really physician confidence when recommending this, and as well as I'm sure they have concerns with their peers of what they would consider them, you know, to be recommending medical cannabis, which is something that's still federally illegal and has been
well. I think that that's it right there. I mean, a big part of it then is that it's still illegal. Marijuana is still illegal at the federal level. And this is a problem. Banks have been reluctant to give loans. I would imagine it's hard to get a small business loan for this. Also, marijuana can't legally be transported across state lines because of federal interstate commerce laws. And because prescribing medical marijuana is illegal under federal law, that gives many doctors pause. So how do you get around that, Darren?
Boots on the ground. It takes going out to the physician, sitting down with them, you know, having a conversation with them, educating them. I also think there's a huge necessity for doctor education outreach and creating conferences to where doctors can congregate, come together, and be educated on cannabis from experts in the field who have worked in this space for over a decade, some of these individuals. So I think, you know, things like that would be a great add value to this industry. And I know I've spoke with Kim about the exact same thing a few weeks ago. So yeah, it's something that is in process.
Kim, what do you do about the banks?
Well, Trulieve is fortunate that we have a banking relationship with a community bank in Florida. So I think that, you know, those tides are shifting, and I'm hopeful. I've been in touch with some colleagues around the country and also with some folks in D.C. recently, and I am hopeful that we'll see some movement in a positive direction from the federal government on the banking issue within the next 6 to 12 months.
So, Daniel, it seems like a lot of these regulations, plus the fact that it's illegal at the federal level, are making it difficult for just a small business owner, a mom and pop, to come into this space.
Definitely. And actually, it makes it difficult even for us that we only do education. For example, our courses first were sold using PayPal, and PayPal decided to take out their opportunity and we cannot use it anymore only because it says the word cannabis. So it has been a challenge for everybody. In Puerto Rico, it's the same. We only use cooperative banking or community banks because they are not allowed, the federal banks, they are not allowed to receive cannabis money. So it has been a challenge for everybody.
How did you get around that, Daniel? That's fascinating. Not using PayPal.
Basically, we changed to another company, Square, and they have been eager to work with us and help us, although it was a hassle because actually, the money that PayPal got, they return it toward the clients, and we have to try to convince those clients back to take our courses and buy them using another platform. It takes more out of the confidence of the students to buy our courses.
You also offer courses for people who want to invest in the field.
Yes. We have a seminar that it is a three-hour seminar that basically we teach to the people that wants to invest in the industry what are the different possibilities that they have here in Florida or in any other of the states that we are currently are. And basically all the opportunities about the industry, the good things about it and the bad things about it, because it's certainly that maybe in Florida it has been booming for everybody, but other states that has been doing this for a long time, the rate of every 10 dispensaries that open, from 6 to 7, they will go close down a couple of years after, because it is not only to open the dispensary, but it's to run it correctly and doing the correct way to gather their patients and conserve their patients. That's a very important part of it. People believe that if they put $1 million, they're going to become even richer, and actually they could lose that $1 million so easily. They will go flying from their hands and they don't even know how.
Darren, you're nodding along with this.
I have seen many, 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 many people since 2006 lose their life savings and lose a lot of money in the cannabis industry in hopes of riches and dreams. You know, when I entered into the space, licenses really didn't exist. It was a compassionate care. You had patients that you serviced. In 2010 in Colorado is when licenses came to be, and I saw companies just wither apart, mostly due to structure and management. You had a lot of mavericks, I would say, enter the space without the business acumen, without the experience. You had investors come in without the horticultural knowledge and fail, you know, miserably. And it's always difficult because you see huge transitions with companies. You see maybe a group come in and buy a company that already has 30 to 40 employees, but they don't know how to manage the company. And it's a sad thing when you see those 30 to 40 people go out of a job and comes a scramble. I've watched that happen in Oregon, Washington, Colorado, a number of states.
So what advice, Darren, would you give to people who want to go into this business? They see it's booming all around them. It's a new industry. It's exciting. You know, seems like a, like I said in the beginning, a gold rush. So what would you, what advice would you give people?
Be very patient. Be wary of the information that you're given and research it. Know the players in any company that you're going to invest in, meaning research your CFOs and CEOs and COOs, and understand that this is not small and pop, mom and pop business anymore. That doesn't really exist in this space. It's certainly not in Florida. This is large investment, a maximum investment into a space to be successful, because it's not really just the money that you invest in cultivation, right? It's the money that you invest in training, in your people, in your processes. Extraction is extremely expensive to get into. And then managing a dispensary, you have to know how to operate a business. So those are really important things. It's not just making sandwiches in a sandwich shop and selling them to people. It's very different.
Kim, do you see any movement toward lessening up of these regulations, or do you think this vertical integration is here to stay?
Oh, the crystal ball question. if there's one thing in being in this business, in particular in Florida, that I've learned, it's that it could change quickly or not at all. You know, this business, from where it started in Florida to where it is even today, in 3 years, it has changed dramatically in so many ways. And so the one thing that we talk about a lot internally, and that I also, when I speak to groups and to folks who are interested in this business in Florida, is I say, you know, the one constant is that you have to be flexible. So I think that it's a changing landscape, and you have to be prepared for that as best as possible.
That's Kim Rivers, CEO of Trulieve. We're also speaking with Daniel Elias, president of Pharmacology University, and Darren Potter, chief horticulture officer at Grow Healthy in Lake Wales. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we always want to hear from you. There are lots of ways to reach us. You can tweet us at Florida Matters, or leave a comment on WUSF's Facebook page, or email us at floridamatters@wusf.org. You'll hear more of this conversation on our podcast, Florida Matters More. You'll find a link to subscribe on our website, WUSF.org, or search for Florida Matters More wherever you get your podcast. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The engineer is George Govan. The producer is Stephanie Colombini. I'm Robin Sessingham. Thanks for listening.